This is Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hello and welcome to Shutters Inc. podcasty thing, episode 366. And joining me from Sydney, as usual, on Skype, Bruce Williams. Hello, Bruce.
Hey, mate. How are you?
You know, I'm marvellous. Did I get it right? Is that close?
Close enough.
So I don't really listen when you introduce us, so yeah. I think it's something like that. I did an intro.
Close enough.
There you go.
Close enough.
Job done.
How you been?
I'm good.
Excellent.
That's a lie.
Yes.
You don't be fooled so easily, my friend. When someone says that so quickly and so glibly back to you, are you sure? Are you definitely okay? Are you really okay, Glenn? No, I haven't got man flu, but I haven't got a cold, but I feel I'm on the verge of a cold.
Right.
You know, I'm starting to whine already, and I think the symptoms come second.
Time to break out the crackers and cheese to go with the wine.
To go with the wine, exactly. Now, I'm okay. I'm a little weary, but all fine and dandy.
Excellent.
And yourself, are you well?
I am.
Excellent. Are you sure?
Yes.
Are you really well, Bruce?
I am. To the best of my knowledge, I am.
Excellent.
I'm actually, I'm counting the days, man. I'm starting to get really pumped about Europe.
You're going to Europe?
I know it's still 3 months away.
No, seriously, you're going to Europe, eh?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. I remember something about that.
Yes. Yes. If you didn't zone out every time I spoke.
Something about your sons going to Europe and therefore.
That's right. That's right. So my wife and I are having 4 weeks around Europe by ourselves, which will be the first time we've had a holiday to ourselves since before she was pregnant.
Can I suggest a one little thing to do?
What's that?
Before you go, get a pre-holiday prenup. Yeah. 4 weeks, no kids, by yourself, just the two of you, yeah. In a foreign land. It's a test, my friend.
Three foreign lands, yes.
There you go.
Yeah, Kath has said that. She said, oh, my God. She said, I don't know how we're going to put up with each other for that long.
See, that's a fortuitous start, isn't it? Yeah. It's still 3 months away, and she's already thinking about, do I want to keep this plate set or give those to him? I want to keep the fancy knives and forks. We can have those cheap ones.
Yeah.
She's already dividing up the stuff, dude.
That's right.
It's not a good start.
Oh, dear.
Hey, I've got a suggestion, though.
Yeah.
Give her the triumph. That'll learn her. That'll teach her. Yeah. Get the lemon off your shoulders.
That's funny. Actually, on that front, though, I would like to ask, do we have any listeners who live on the south coast of Portugal? We will be visiting Portimão.
There's some people who live on the north coast.
Well, not necessarily. There is no north coast of Portugal.
There you go.
There is only a south coast and a west coast.
Exactly.
But I'd love to know if we've got any listeners in Portugal. One of the places that we're going to be stopping is a city or town or a city called Portimão on the south coast. And if you Google Sea Caves, Portimão, and Portimão is Portimao.
I'm supposed to be doing this.
Have a look at some of the Google images. There are these caves which are enclosed but have these circular holes that open up through the roof, and they're just amazing and photographically very interesting.
Why do you need someone to...
Well, I want to just, you know, if there's someone locally who's a photographer... Who, you know, if you're local, you've probably... Yeah, it's pretty cool, eh? So I figured if there's someone local who's a photographer, they've probably shot them. They know how best to get there, the best times to get there, you know, what are the best conditions under which to shoot these caves. So, yeah, so I thought if we've got a listener amongst the ranks of our 7 or 8 listeners who's based in Portugal, give me a yell.
So the next thing to do is to go and... This is what I normally do when I'm traveling to a location.
Yep.
Is I would look up that town and type in photographer.
Right.
And try and find a local photographer that way. Or I'll go on Flickr and find if there's a Flickr group about it and see if there's someone who posts all the time.
That's a great idea. Yeah. I did look on Facebook and I couldn't find any groups relating to that area, but yes, Flickr is probably a better idea.
Well, it's an option, but I said certainly type in the nearest towns and photographer. So that's what I did for Varanasi, and I just typed in, photographer Varanasi, and I found this group. So when we were over there last time, we had a meetup with 40 local photographers.
That's right. I remember you telling
that
me.
That's just by the power of the internet.
Nice.
It gave me an idea. How do we connect with people over there with no easy connection? And away you go.
Fantastic.
So worth a shot.
Yeah.
E-Googleize it.
Yes.
And, see what you come up with.
Yes. Yeah. Now, the first thing I saw on my list of stuff today was something that you saw as well, and so you should have, being an ambassador for Godox. Tell us about it. This thing looks awesome.
I don't know nothing about it.
You must know something.
Well, I'm not really an ambassador. I'm just sponsored by, so I get free stuff. So I don't get stuff in advance. So I haven't really paid an awful lot of attention to them, to be honest. They didn't hear that, though.
Nice work.
None of our seven listeners are going to mention it, which is absolutely fabulous. Well, they're calling it somewhere between a speed light and a studio light, but it's portable and it's battery operated and it's pocket size. So you can put it in the back of a jeans pocket, as an example.
Yeah.
But it's more powerful than like your top end Nikon or Canon flash guys, like your 600s or
rate it as a guide number of 52, which sort of puts it up there with the top of your speed lights.
No, they're all about 44. Well, once again, you got to take these numbers with
a grain of salt. Okay.
So 44 or 52 based on what zoom head.
Okay, uh-huh. So fair enough.
So if it's zoomed to 200, an SB 910 or not, was it 910? Yeah, has a guide number of 58 or something.
Right.
But zoomed out to 14, it's got a guide number of like 22.
Yep.
So it's a fair variation. Now, you're never going to be shooting all the time with your flash head at 200 mil zoom head.
No.
So, 50. Yeah. So I always say it's got a guide number of 44.
Right.
Which is based at a 50 mil lens, focal lens, which is about the midway point between all your zooms.
Sure.
Within reason, anyway.
Yeah.
So, it's supposedly about a 55, a 52. But, and they're also claiming in watt seconds it's a 2,000 watt second head.
Yeah.
Which, frankly, I find hard to believe as well. But having said that negativity, it looks like an awesome piece of kit because it's got removable flash head, basically.
Yep.
So you can take off, it can be a traditional flash, which is with a Fresnel lens on the front.
Yep.
So it can focus the light, as we were just talking about with the zooms, or you can take that head off and put another head on, which is a bare tube, bare flash.
Or you can put on modifiers.
And, of course, then that bare flash one would also then go into soft boxes, et cetera, et cetera. And the other great thing about it, like a lot of the other Godox flashes now, they're all lithium battery-based. So all the batteries are built in, and they're saying 500 full-power flashes per charge.
Wow.
And they charge their full power, well, they're doing the speed lights, in about a second flat.
Yeah.
So if you get 500 full power flashes at a second flat charge, it's bloody awesome.
Yeah.
And all that for the princely sum US of about $330.
Oh, but you missed the best bit.
What's that?
TTL support for Canon, Nikon and Sony.
I don't care about that.
You don't? You don't care about TTL support? Why not? Because you do everything manual.
Yeah, I know how flash works. I don't trust the camera. Would you shoot everything in green auto mode on your camera?
No.
Same thing.
Put it
TTL flash basically shooting green auto mode.
Yeah. If you were shooting a corporate function or something where you've got to run and gun, those are the times where I would rely on TTL because you just don't have time to be dialing crap in all the time.
Codswallop. I've never changed camera settings or flash settings. I use TTL for these things. But I've never changed camera settings once doing any reception ever.
Right.
I've never changed – well, I might have changed ISO once.
Right.
But I always use the same shutter speed. I always use the same aperture. And I always vary between one and two ISOs depending on how dark the place is.
Right.
And flash on TTL. And there's no dialing anything down.
Okay.
All right, just aim point bang.
Okay.
Direct flash, no, this bounce crap.
Yeah.
Direct flash straight at the heads.
Yeah. So you are using TTL?
Yeah. On camera, I always use TTL on camera.
Right.
But I could use manual, but it's a pain in the bum.
Yeah.
But you're not going to be using this flash on camera.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
This is not a hot shoe flash.
Right. Fair enough.
Is it?
No.
It's not a hot shoe flash. It's an off-camera lighting system, effectively.
Yeah.
I'm going to say, look, I said, once again, for the price, we're going to say $330 US, $499 Australian,
yep.
$469, something like that. I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Look, if you're going traveling and you don't want to be taking, you know, bulky speed lights and stuff like that, it could be a good option.
Well, I still think it's going to be physically about the same size as a speed light.
You reckon?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I'm looking
at the photographs of it.
I'm looking at that picture of
Gene Poppy.
Yeah.
Oh, the front. Well, yeah, I can do that with the speed light, though. It looks about the same size.
Okay.
The advantage is it's a bit of a flatter form factor, so it doesn't have those big, bulky, bumpy bits sticking out, which can be a bit of a pain.
Yeah.
But I'm going to say it's roughly the same size.
Okay.
But because it's completely flat, they can pack them in better into a case.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're toting three or four of them around, always the problem with packing flash guns is you couldn't have to 69 them, basically, you know, one facing one way, one facing another way, to get the bumpy bits together.
Yeah.
Whereas this, because it's flat,
yep,
just line up against each other. So, look, I think it's a fabulous looking piece of kit, and I can't wait to see it.
Yeah. We didn't tell you what it was called, but obviously the links will be in the show notes. It's called Godox Wistro. Pocket
Wistro
flash.
Is this series of bigger flash guns, yeah.
Right, Pocket Flash AD200. So there's doesn't say when they will be available, but they are available for pre-order from Adorama now. So, yeah, very nifty looking little gadget.
I like it very much.
Yes. Now, the next thing I came across was a video I saw on Facebook, and this is not quite the happy, smiley stuff that we normally cover on Shutters, Inc., but I thought it was interesting. Let me give you the backstory of what the video's about. It's about a police officer in a little town in America who spotted a car that was driving erratically. He pulled them up, and shortly after the car stopped, both the driver and the female passenger in the front seat overdosed. They were on drugs.
Yeah.
They both overdosed and passed out. And in the back seat was a four-year-old boy in a car seat. And
they put him in a car seat?
Yeah, exactly. So this police officer immediately thought of the social ramifications of the decisions that this pair of, you know, use the term loosely, adults had made in driving under the influence of drugs with a four-year-old boy in the back. And so he decided to take photographs. Now, they're not Pulitzer winning photographs. They were just shot on a smartphone. But interestingly, you know, he conferred with his boss and they made the decision that they would release these images to the public via Facebook. And, you know, there were certain civil rights activists who got all up in arms and said, oh, you know, you violated the privacy of the child. And they were like, well, we feel there's a stronger social message here that needs to be shared. And when this police officer woke up the following morning, he said he was absolutely amazed at how many responses and interactions there had been to these images just in the, you know, 12 or 14 hour period since this had all transpired. And they made up this short video about the whole incident. And the reason I included it was because I just thought it was a very poignant example of how photography can really drive a message home in ways that other forms of media don't.
Well, I mean, cause you can describe it, but most people aren't going to read the words until the picture's going to drag them in. But I'm so disbelieving of stuff these days.
Right.
That this whole thing about he immediately thought of the social implication. I call shenanigans on that.
Okay.
I reckon he's taking the photos for his own pleasure. Got found out. That he was taking photos at a scene that he should have maybe, I don't know, been getting first aid help. And then they've concocted this story about the social ramifications of, because he's not helping these people who probably need first aid help. It takes time to get your phone out, because I'm thinking as a police officer, it's not convenient. He's prepared to pop back the car to get his phone.
I don't know, because it is 24 hours since I watched the video, but I think there was reference to him calling for help, you know, over his radio before he took the photos. So
yeah, basically.
Yeah.
Police are trained in first aid.
Okay.
Okay. I'm just thinking there's all these other things about, okay, if you're a photographer and you see someone about to shoot someone, do you stop the shooting or do you take the photo of the person being shot? You know, and this has been
a guy who won this year's Pulitzer Prize.
Yeah, well, argument's been going a long time. Now, this guy has chosen, for whatever reason, to take the photographs.
Yep.
Yes, I totally get the social, but it's not going to change anything.
But maybe he had done everything he could do up to that point. And
they hadn't been moved out of the seats, Bruce.
Well, what are you going to do to a drug overdose victim on the side of the road with no medical
You take supplies? Them off to the edge of the road, put them into a position where they're not going to choke and die. Make sure they're breathing, make sure they haven't swallowed their tongues.
Okay.
The position they're in those photographs is where lots of people are dead bodies are found because they've died like that, choking on their tongues.
Right.
So he hasn't put them in any sort of position to ensure their safety until help arrives. He's left them in situ.
Okay.
And decided to take photos.
Okay.
Yeah. He's done nothing to, once again, this didn't have to take very long, but he's done nothing to calm the boy down because the boy's looking fairly distressed in the back there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's face it, if this car was driving erratically, it didn't stop by itself. It must have crashed into something
he was saying that the driver was still conscious at the time that he pulled the vehicle up, but passed out very soon thereafter.
Look, I said, it's just a tricky situation. Now, you've got to have that. It's not going to affect anybody who's going to do this thing. So the people who are doing the drugs...
No.
And driving aren't going to change their habits because they see this.
True.
All it's going to do is get moral outrage of people like us.
Okay.
Who aren't going to do anything to change anything.
Right. So you're saying we wasted the last 10 minutes of the podcast?
No, I think it's an important discussion. I just don't think their theory behind why they took the photos and their justification for the images and what they did with them stands any weight.
Okay.
Yeah. So if that's the case, then maybe he should have been helping these people out, possibly, you know, because this is not the first. I think it's like the second one of these that's happened recently.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. And both times it's been photographed.
Right.
Yeah. Whilst the people are, they're unconscious in the car and there's kids in the back, you know,
right. It's like. Oh, okay. Well, it's the first time I've heard of it. So.
Yeah. So I'm just not sure that it's necessarily going to. Yet the photograph's going to get people outraged.
Right. But
that's the world is constantly outraged now. We live in a state of outrage.
Yeah.
So all it does is dull people's senses to that because we've seen yet one more piece of thing to be outraged about, and we're outraged until we saw the next thing we're outraged about, which is next time we look on Facebook.
Yeah, exactly.
This is our world these days. We should call it Outrage Book.
Yes.
Yeah. Or Troll Book is another one as well. So I don't know. So I understand maybe the shock of the. But these police officers must be so sick of some of the stuff they see and the stupidity of what they see.
For sure.
I just don't know if this. I'd love to hear if anyone has a different viewpoint. Not that I'd listen to it, but, you know.
Nothing. Nothing.
Always get honesty for me, dude.
Brutally honest as usual. Oh, dear.
Just the way I is. Yeah, okay, well, that's a nice little this conversation.
Yeah.
We got an email from someone. We did.
This was a comment on the show notes for the last episode via shuttersincpodcast.com from Peter Samble, who said, "Hi, Bruce and Glenn. I've heard Bruce talk about Darktable as a substitute for Photoshop and wondered if you've heard of Affinity Photo, which is also a Photoshop alternative. I haven't used it yet, but it appears to be a free beta version out now for Windows, but it's been around on the Mac for a while, February 2015. It's $50 to purchase, and after watching the intro video on Petapixel, appears to do what Photoshop does. Interested in your thoughts." Well, Peter, thank you for that. Your message only came in, it did come in a few hours before we started recording, but in that time I've had to commute home, cook dinner, and do a bunch of other things. So I haven't had a chance to look at the video, nor have I had a chance to have a look at Affinity Photo yet. But I've got to say, I'm pretty much sold on my conversion to Linux. I'm loving Darktable, which does all the Lightroom side of things, and when I want the Photoshop kind of things, it's GIMP. So, but yeah, I will certainly check it out and see what it does.
Well, just having a quick look online, just in what people are saying about it.
Yeah.
So TechRadar are giving it a 5-star rating.
Right.
And saying it's a fabulous program that really does rival the best professional and enthusiast level imaging editing packages on the market.
Wow.
And it easily takes the lead over previous set of programs that we've seen for PC and is a worthy winner of Apple's Mac App of the Year award.
Wow.
Interesting. So they're saying Affinity Photo is based around four persona or work modules: photo, liquify, develop, and export.
Okay.
I wonder what liquify is. It's got me curious.
Well, that would be like the liquify tool in Photoshop, which allows you to actually smudge pixels.
Yeah, I get that, but I wouldn't see why that would be an individual module.
No, neither can I.
Yeah, as opposed to a filter.
Mm.
But even people are f-stoppers. Finally, a true alternative to Photoshop for Windows.
Wow.
Yeah, so it just got some good reviews out there.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. We'll definitely have a look at that. And love to hear from anyone else who's given it a try.
And thanks, Pete.
Yeah. Tell us what you thought.
Very nice of you, Pete.
Adam sent us a couple of stories this week, one from PetaPixel.
I hope Adam's doing all right. Now, Adam's, yeah, last I heard, in need of a job.
Right.
So if anyone out there in the Melbourne sort of southeastern suburbs right. has something good in IT.
Yep.
Yeah, Adam put the SH in IT, so he's your man. if you're just looking for a good bloke who works hard, well, yeah.
Adam, you're really Adam, selling him
Adam,
well, mate.
Adam is one of the people you should put on the top 100. No, Adam's a great guy and... honest as the day is short. No, that's not right, is it?
Soldier down the river, ads.
If you know of any great jobs, nothing under $150,000, apparently. He doesn't get out of bed for that's not that. Yeah. Drop us a line and we'll pass it on to him. There you go. Excellent. That should get the job.
Anyway. In his other job as a researcher for Shutters Inc., Adam came up with the following stories. The first one is about how the bots are beating you with regards photo sharing sites like 500px and Flickr and, you know, other sites like that. And it's all about, you know, this ability to engineer your social network interactions and that you can create bots which will essentially take on your persona and then go out and like other photographers on these websites. And the way they become successful at it is they hit up all the people who have just signed up on those new yeah. social sites. So they're people who don't have any contacts at that point. And so suddenly all these bots are becoming their friend and the hope is that those people will then return the friendship. And of course, those likes then transfer straight through from the bot to your account. And so, you know, the people who are utilizing these bots are able to socially engineer more likes and shares and all that sort of stuff. But it's a very interesting article. I haven't read the entire article, but it does start out by saying, you know, that these sites are not the best way to share your photography, simply because when you share your photography, you don't want people looking at other people's photography. You want them looking at your photography.
Yep. Yeah.
And it seems that, you know, that when you go to, you know, 500px or Flickr or any other site, the moment someone looks at your stuff, they're immediately, you know, bombarded with a whole bunch of similar type photography from other photographers on the same site, you know, that might have shot similarly themed images.
Yeah.
And people can be very easily distracted and drawn away from your work and onto the work of someone who's maybe a little bit better at it. It was an interesting story. What are your thoughts?
I'm just flicking through it now. I'm buying some of these right away. That's it. What?
Glenn the
boss. Wasn't that what we were talking about? Getting how to get more people liking
us? That's right. That's exactly.
You know, right. I'm insecure. Yeah. Why do people love me?
The next one basically follows on a similar kind of theme. This was again on PetaPixel. A simple web tool helps you find your ideal lens simply by choosing 20 photos that you like.
I love it.
Now the guy
this is gold.
Why?
Oh, it's just like Oh, it's like it just takes all the passion and all the joy out of anything. It's just corker. Oh, I'm in love already. It's just, let's just kill everything about photography and
yeah.
What we should do is get bitofmyholidayphoto.com and you know, I want to go to India, take some nice photos. Who's going to go over there and do it for me? He'll do it for the cheapest. Yeah, this is the photos I want to see, and off we go.
Yeah, love it. Interestingly, this tool only works on Canon lenses at the moment, and it's of no value if you're shooting on a smartphone, because it relies on, you know, lens data. But anyway, the guy who's developed it has promised all sorts of, you know, new features to come down the track.
Of course. I love it.
And the third one that Adam sent us is a call for submissions. A guy called Art Wolf wants to edit your RAW files.
What do you mean, a guy called Art Wolf?
What?
It's not a guy called Art Wolf.
No?
It's the Art Wolf.
Okay. What's Art Wolf? Oh, dear. There's a picture Carry of on. A guy with a hat on. I assume that was Art Carry Wolf.
Carry on. And by carrion, I mean like dead animal by the side of the road. Carry on.
You tell me. Tell me about Art Wolf.
I don't know anything about him.
Renowned nature and cultural photographer, Art Wolf.
He's incredibly well known.
Okay.
A mate of mine, Adam, not Adam, you know, another Adam, was in India once and staying at this hotel and was talking to some guy at a bar about photography one night. Anyway, he's sitting there a couple of nights later at the same bar. This guy, same guy comes running in. He goes, quick, you seem to be an expert on Photoshop and Lightroom. Is that right? He goes, well, I know a fair bit. This guy's a genius. He goes, we need your help. And he drags him to this room. There's this Art Wolf guy. He's got a problem with his Photoshop. He's done something weird to one of his photos.
Right.
And he can't undo it. And so Adam sits there, presses 16 buttons and fixes it all up. And they're all on their knees praying to him at the end. You know, it's like when something disastrous has happened and someone says it's like, oh, thank God. The Art Wolf is a very, very well-known photographer. Even I've heard of him, so he must be well-known.
Okay. Well, I'd never heard of him.
Philistine.
That's it.
No, Philistine. That's an American lady. Lovely. Philistine. She's great. Art's doing a creative live thing on post-production.
Right.
And concepts and visualization and blah, 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 and all that sort of stuff. And people get a chance to submit their photos to him.
Right.
And he will edit somebody else's photos on the Creative Live program rather than just his own stuff, which is kind of cool because, you know, his stuff's going to be optimized to be the best six images or whatever.
Yep.
Where he's going to get at least a bit more random potluck from whatever's sent in to him. And he's still going to be choosing the ones that tell the story he's trying to show in the post-production the best. But still nice to see him work on somebody else's images rather than his own.
Okay.
And it'd be pretty cool if it was one of your images, you know, to see what somebody else can do with their work. We did that once years ago on some website I was on. Everyone shared a file and had to get somebody else to post-process their photo for them.
Right.
It's kind of a cool thing because you get the one photo processed by seven different people and get seven completely different end results.
Right.
Which shows about, you know, creative visions, not just in the shooting, but it's in the post-processing as well.
Yeah. All right.
I liked it, Adam. Don't listen to that Bruce guy. I liked it.
Tony White sent us a couple of stories, and the first one was about a photo of a bowl of strawberries.
Just wake me up when this one's finished. Tony is being very, very, very nice.
Yeah.
He knows I've been insomnia this week and I've been pretty darn tired.
Yeah.
And he said, I understand Glenn's been having insomnia. Here's something that's going to help put him to sleep. Called the and he's done a fabulous job by me. I started watching it within a minute, gone.
Right.
So off you go.
So this is a photo of a plate of strawberries and there is not, and I should say they are ripe strawberries, and there is not a red pixel in the image, but this is a color image. And so the contention or the title of this story on DP Review is this photo of some strawberries with no red pixels is the new The Dress, which is a reference to the, you know, blue and black / gold and white dress meme, which saturated the internet exactly 2 years ago to the month. So, yeah, interesting. Why this image has no red pixels, I don't know. But anyway.
because they chose to. But it's done by an experimental psychologist.
What?
The concept's been done, but it's developed from an original photograph by an experimental psychologist called Akiyoshi Kitaoka. That's exactly right. How you say his name, too, by the way. That was perfect.
Uh-huh.
But I had to sleep through it, and I appreciate that.
So, yeah, it strikes me that that's... Yeah, I don't know. So they've post-processed the image to make it that way. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, but it's a psychological test.
Yeah.
It's like when you do a colour chart to see what colours you can't see. See if you're colourblind. It's the same, I'm gathering, yeah.
Anyway.
I liked it, Tony. You got that, Bruce Hall.
Oh, I love it. Okay, and the most jaw-dropping photos from Sony's 2017 World Photography Awards. And there are some great images in this lot. I don't know if you've had a chance to skim through these, Glenn, but...
Not a skerrick.
Okay. Some of them are obviously...
I think I saw the cover image and that was it.
Some are photo manipulation, like the second one with the fish. Oh, no, it's not. Oh, no, it's a photo. It's taken underwater. I get it. But there's some interesting stuff amongst it. I love the one of the rhino with the reflections of the water. Thought that was pretty cool. Great one of three women, or three people anyway, I assume they're women, walking, but shot from overhead. It's kind of like the camels with their shadows image that's quite famous.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, similar kind of concept. Yeah, a couple of nice images in there. Well, I mean, they're all nice images. I'd probably be happy if I'd shot any of them, but...
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's it, yeah.
Trouble is, when you see so many great images all together, it kind of numbs you.
Yep. It's deadly true. I mean, the internet's killing photography.
Yeah.
No, it is. I mean, because you're on the internet. I think we were talking about this the other week. You see these amazing shots and go, well, yeah, I can't do that. We had a great... Oh, I have to bring this up. Oh, sorry, I remember. We had a great email from Reg Vardy. Right. Our mate Reg.
Yeah. How long ago?
I forgot all about it. Only a week or so ago. And
he must have only sent it to you because he didn't send it to me.
He did. Well, it did nothing to do with you. Yeah. So let me read it. G'day, Glenn. You're an amazing and incredible person. I can't believe I'm fortunate.
Can you actually read what he wrote?
Okay. G'day, Glenn. Fired up my podcast app for the first time in 6 months. So we've kept him on the tenterhooks. And heard your comments from last week's podcast on others' amazing images on the internet tending to demoralise you.
Okay. Is this last week's podcast from 6 months ago?
No, I think it was a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
It resonated nicely with me, as I have often been looking at the amazing photos on many photographic websites such as 500px or Flickr, and thought, I'll never be able to do anything like those. In addition, your comments on Milky Way photos also hit the spot as I started doing numerous astro shots over the last few months. The amount of time needed for post-processing, stacking, noise reduction needed is understandable, but the end result, colour-wise, can look totally different from someone else taking exactly the same image on exactly the same night. As someone viewing my efforts so succinctly put it, well, it's pretty, but it's not what we, non-photographers, see in the sky. You may as well be using multiple Instagram filters.
Hmm. Wow. Ouch.
Wow. That's pretty brutal, isn't it? Wouldn't say something like that.
They didn't like you, Reg.
I finally put behind me my worthy but misguided thoughts of being a portrait photographer. Simply not enough opportunities. Independently, I also came to the conclusion that trying to compare my photography to others on the web was dispiriting, or as you put it, soul-destroying. So 2017 is to be my year of improving my style of photography, using what's available to me. I'm no longer on Facebook, hence this email. All the best to you and the family for fulfilling 2017. P.S. This is the first and last rambling email from me this year. But.
Well, good on you, Reg. Good on you for taking a stand and going, to hell with the rest of the planet, I'm going to shoot for myself. Yeah. That's great.
I'll take the crap that I like to take, the bad way I like to take it.
Yeah, absolutely.
We all want to be better, but we can't be better than somebody else.
Well, we can't be better than everybody else. We can be better than some people. We just can't be better than everybody.
We can't be better than anybody else. All we can be better than the only person we can improve against is ourselves.
Okay.
We're not in a team sport here.
No, we're not.
Yeah, this is a solo pursuit. and the only person you can outrun is yourself.
Right.
And so looking at other people running past you, if you don't run very fast, you see people running past you, and you're never going to be able to beat them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you're great at running 200 meters and the guy next to you runs marathons, you've got no hope. You know?
Yep.
So you can't outrun the other people. Yeah. Just try and beat your own personal best.
Okay. Interesting metaphor.
But it's deadly true, though. There's only you to compete with.
Okay.
Yeah. And this is, and you go on these sites and you see these images, you go, oh, God, yeah, that's just, yeah. Beyond anything I'm ever going to be, and I see it. I feel the same all the time myself. Yeah, just look at this photos we just saw. This Sony 2017 awards.
Yeah,
you go, my God, there is some phenomenal stuff going on.
Yeah,
looks all over anything I'm doing.
Yeah,
yeah. Anyway,
all right. Well, that's all the listener stuff. What do you got?
Me, nothing at all. I did have a few bits. I just curiously, was, you know how I like to keep a look on DP review or D preview, depending on how you prefer it.
Yeah.
Top 10 camera list.
Yeah.
You know, most viewed cameras for the week.
Yeah.
I'm always keen to see what's going on there because it gives you a bit of a play to what's happening in the industry, right?
Yeah.
Well, the top 10 cameras at the moment in total make up less than 16% of total views of cameras.
Say that again.
The top 10 cameras combined percentage-wise of views versus all other cameras viewed on their website make up less than 16% of all views, which means that the average is around about the majority are around about 1.3% of views of cameras.
Right.
The highest is 3.6% of views. That's a Leica SL, which less than 1% of everything they'll afford to buy.
Yeah.
But, so I'm just going to show how
there's nothing out there. The market is?
Well, there's nothing that's capturing people's imagination. There's not one brand that's soaring. There's not one dominant thing that's, oh my God, I've got to see this camera. Yeah. It's so evenly spread across so many, obviously across so many cameras.
Yeah.
There must be 80 cameras in their top 100, in their top list.
Yeah.
To be spread that evenly.
Which is what I mean by oversaturation of the market. There's just too much product to choose from.
Yeah, but there's not one. But there's always been highlights. There's always been one that's capturing people. There's always one that's got three or four times as many views as anything else, the thing that's hot at the moment.
Right.
Yeah, and there's nothing hot. Kind of sad. Yeah, sad indictment of the industry. Hey, when we talked about last week that 33% drop in camera sales shipments from Japan last year.
Yep.
And then in February, now March, you see, on the biggest website for photography going around, just about.
Yeah.
No one's looking at anything, effectively.
Could you not argue that all of the manufacturers are collectively at roughly the same standard of, product quality?
Oh, it's nothing to do with quality.
And they're all good.
It's nothing to do with quality or being good or bad. It's about hype, what's exciting people, what's got people talking. And if people aren't talking and if people aren't excited, that's not a good place to be in a business that revolves around passion.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of wonder if the internet – well, I think we can all agree. The internet has changed the way marketing plays out. And I wonder is – the absence of what you're saying, there's no one thing that's standing out head and shoulders above the rest. Is that simply because we all have access to so much information now that...
No, but this has been... We've had access to that information for quite a long time now, Bruce.
You reckon?
Well, should we say 5 years at least?
Yeah, okay.
There's an absolute minimum.
Right.
And there's never been like this in 5 years.
Okay.
So, I'm always watching this top 10 list. This is something you've heard me the past. It's like, oh, Nikon's got 60% of the top 10 list at the moment. Yep. Canon's down to only 10% or whatever. I'm always keeping an eye on what's exciting people.
Right.
What's pulling the internet geeks looking at this stuff.
Yeah.
And when nothing's pulling them, that's a bit of a concern.
Hmm. Okay.
For me.
Fair enough.
And I remember I look at this stuff very differently from you guys. I mean, I'm an industry person. Yep. I think about this stuff from what's that? How's that going to affect retailers? How's that going to affect wholesale? How's that affecting the actual, not the photography side of stuff, not the shooting side of stuff, but the industry side of stuff.
Right.
Yeah. So how many camera stores does this equate to going to get out of business? Because no one's excited about a product this season. Yeah. All this is all stuff that these numbers tweak in my head. So
yeah, right.
So I thought that was very telling personally.
Yeah.
A couple of other things. This is a classic example. The CP Plus show just finished in New York last week, a couple of days ago.
Never heard of it. What is it?
It's a huge show.
Right.
These days in America, it's probably the biggest photographic show.
Right.
So because PMA doesn't exist anymore, that was the biggest.
Right.
CES is such a mishmash of stuff that most of the brands don't even
show up. That's not really photography.
Yeah, so CP Plus is by far the biggest show in America, photo show in America.
Right.
And having read this quote, the fact that the most popular thing at the Nikon stand was a strap is very telling.
Who was the quote from?
This is from DP Review.
Oh, okay. Right.
The most popular thing at the show for Nikon and Nikon stand was a bloody strap. Does that not ring, after what we've just been talking about, does that not ring alarm bells?
That's a bit worrying.
At the biggest show in America this year, all they cared about was this 100th anniversary strap.
Okay, what if the person who wrote that was a Canon fanboy?
But no Canon releases, no announcements from any of the majors.
Okay.
No new products. No, and it means Sigma released 4 lenses.
Right.
Great stuff. Tamron brought out their 2 new lenses. Great stuff.
Yeah.
Third party, like fourth party, fifth party, whatever you want to call them, all these new lens brand names popping up all over the place. They showed off some new stuff. But the majors, out of Canon and Nikon, the thing that's being talked about the most was Nikon's 100-year strap. That ain't so good.
Oh, dear.
And then so I thought, okay, I'll look at these new – I saw this thing about a review about the new Nikon 12 to 24. So I thought, I'll have a little look at that.
You mean Sigma?
The Sigma 12 to 24. So I thought I'd have a bit of a look because, yeah, it's a significantly cheaper than the brand name stuff, that $2,500 versus $1,500 or whatever.
Yep.
But I read right next to each other 2 viewer comments, okay? I had to cut and paste them. So
okay.
Viewer number one. The Canon price tag, $2,500, is $1,000 more expensive. It is justifiable. Canon has built it an amazing lens. Sigma is not that bad, but it is lacking in the following areas. Sharpness is not as sharp as the wider aperture, and weaker across the – I'm sure that meant at the wider aperture.
Right.
Not as sharp at the wider aperture, and weaker across the entire field at 24 mil. It's got higher distortion, higher chromatic aberration, higher vignetting at 24 mil, and it's lower than the Canon at 12 mil.
Right.
So
whatever
Canon's
that means.
Got less vignettes. Yep. Okay. So Canon's got less vignetting at 12 mil than this thing has at 24.
Oh, okay.
That's one.
Right.
Next comment.
Yeah.
The DxO Mark test showed that the Sigma has a better transmission, less distortion, less vignetting, and less chromatic aberration than the Canon. These guys wasn't arguing against each other. These are 2 people who posted almost simultaneously.
Yeah.
One saying how bad it is because of how bad the chromatic aberration is. The one saying how good it is because of the lack of chromatic aberration. One guy saying how bad the vignetting is. The one saying how good the vignetting is. It's like, oh, how could you ever make a decision when you follow the internet?
Yeah.
The
interesting thing is that the second guy is quoting DxO Mark.
Yeah.
Which, you know, on one hand, you could say, well, okay, at least there's some solid research being done. On the other hand, you could also say, why get caught up in the numbers?
Yeah.
But the first guy doesn't quote his sources, so it could just be his subjective opinion that, you know...
I think he was looking at the DP Reviews test.
Oh, okay. Right.
But here's the thing too, though.
Yeah.
This is a survey based on one lens.
Yeah.
I think if DxO should do a test on 100 of those lenses.
Oh, I see.
Because
the
variation from lens to lens, from individual lens to individual lens, can be huge.
Yep.
If your testing sample is one lens,
yep,
you can't be proof of anything.
Yeah.
Back in the days of 1981, I used to work for a company called Fletcher's Photographics.
Yep.
Those days, they had 53 stores around Australia. It was Australia's biggest chain.
Yep.
And we used to have our own brand called Flexar.
Right.
And we had this Flexar 180 to 200 lens, and some of them were absolute dogs.
Oh, really?
Some of them were better than the Nikon or Canon 80 to 200s. I mean, significantly better. So we as staff would go through, when we wanted to buy one, we'd line up 24 of them, wow, put a roll of 24 film in,
yeah,
take 24 shots of the same thing, mark them all, and buy the best one for ourselves. Now, quality control, that was a cheap lens, they're much better these days, but there is still variations from lens to lens. That, yeah, if your sample test is one lens, how can it be a definitive review?
And while I'm not taking a direct shot at Sigma, any company that was going to submit a lens to someone like DxO Mark for testing is probably going to cherry pick what's coming off the production line to make sure that whatever they sent was the absolute best example of that lens possible.
Yeah. And you want it wrapped in duck feathers or something and keep the thing from getting even the slightest knock on the way over. Absolutely. I mean, if they're not going through 1,000 lenses and picking the one their testing machine that show is the best,
yeah,
they're crazy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, exactly right. So, weird. Oh, yeah, and Elecron have just announced a new Quadra, what I like to call the Quadra on steroids, the new ELB 1200. Right. So the Quadra system I'm using is basically a 400-watt second head. Flash head.
Yep.
This is my portable battery light system I use when I do my body paint shoots and all that sort of stuff. Well, this is a 1,200 watt second.
Right.
So it's three times as powerful as my existing Quadra.
Yeah.
And they've got, and if you go to the link there, you'll find there's a video there of them, they're photographing in these hang gliders. They're like a parachute, and you glide with these parachutes and steer.
Right.
I don't know what they're called. They're like floating wings or something. But there's one guy flying along at sunset on one of these wings. Another guy flying behind him holding the flash kit. Another guy and another one flying, taking photos. So they're lighting this guy from the sky.
Awesome.
Which is seriously cool stuff.
That's great.
I'm looking forward to getting my hands on one of those in the near future and putting it through its paces.
Yeah, nice.
Once again, one of the biggest advantages, because it does high-speed sync, and high-speed sync, you lose a lot of power. So if you can put up a flash of this sort of power, 1,200 watt seconds outdoors, that's pretty darn good. Once again, with their high-end batteries, there's a couple of types of batteries you can get around about 400 or 500 flashes, full power.
Nice.
But also they've got an LED modeling light that's powerful enough to use as a video light.
Wow.
So you could, in low light, like when we travel overseas and we do stuff, we normally use an LED panel. Theoretically, we could use one of these.
Yeah, right.
You get a couple of hours of continuous light out of the thing. So
wow.
The disadvantage is the battery, the controller weighs 9 pounds.
Right.
9 or 10 pounds. It's a fair bit of weight to carry around if you're traveling overseas. But as a working tool, it looks like it could be a very, very sweet piece of kit.
Yeah, right.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, if you've got your 100 to 400 mil lens in one hand and you've got that battery pack in the other hand, you'll be balanced.
Yeah, exactly.
Quit your whinging.
And I think that is it for me. If I understand it was something else. Oh, no, I was going to waffle on one last thing.
Yeah.
Did we all see the Super Bowl footage of Beyonce, whoever it was, on top of the Super Bowl stand with all these drones flying in the air behind her?
No, I didn't. Was it good?
Well, they had 300 drones all with LED colored LED lights on them.
Oh, okay.
And they flew them in patterns, and at one stage flew a massive American flag flying in midair behind her.
Wow.
Yeah, so all lit up. So it's just lights. So all it looks like it's flying lights, but it's actually drones.
Wow.
Well, this drone company in China has done one, a promotional video for their own brand with 1,000 drones.
Whoa.
Yeah. It's very amazing what I can just see the future of New Year's Eve fireworks now with 10,000 drones lighting up the sky. It's the perfect environmental set for fireworks, is you don't need fireworks. Yeah. You just get drones to fly up and then burst into different directions and different colours. But it's pretty darn cool to see how they can coordinate that many drones.
Yeah.
And these are big drones. They're not like little tiny little handheld ones. These are full size DJI Phantom type things.
Yeah.
And having 1,000 in the air at once is pretty darn cool.
Wow.
So definitely worth having a look at.
I wonder if they're using one controller to control all of them, or because you could have.
I think they've got 1,000 preteens. Well, those guys, they know everything. Yeah. And they work cheap.
They'd have to all be linked.
Yeah, arm in arm, possibly. But the technology to get those things flying in formation like that is pretty astounding. So
yeah,
definitely worthwhile watching.
Excellent. All right.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. It's been delightful having you here. Come back again. Come back and join us all in this locality
next week.
Sounds like the Beverly Hillbillies, really, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Now it's time to say goodbye to you and all our kin. We'd like to thank you all for kindly dropping in. We hope you return sometime to this locality to have a heap and helping of our hospitality. That's Reg Vardy to you. Come back again. It's not once every 6 months. We didn't realise we'd dropped down to 6 listeners.
All right, mate. Talk to you next week.
See you all.
Bye. All right, but before we go, David Marlin's got another book about speed lighting. Take it away, David.
Thanks, Bruce. Now for something completely the same but different. Last time I reviewed Mastering the Canon EOS Flash System by NK Guy. This time I'm looking at exactly the same subject, but from a different perspective. This time the book is The Speedlighter's Handbook by Sil Arena. Now that's the guy who wrote Lid Lips, Lessons I Didn't Learn in Photo School. The giveaway is the subtitle to this book, Learning to Craft Light with Canon Speedlights. And the words craft light are highlighted. Now, just before I continue, Nikon shooters don't despair. There's a Nikon book from the same publisher that I'll speak about later. This book is a very approachable book. It's dominated by practical advice and diagrams. Yes, there are detailed bits about Canon equipment and some limited information on third-party flash and wireless systems. But even the detail is presented really clearly, it's well illustrated, and from a first-hand view from Sil's experience. Now, although it's jam-packed with all this comprehensive information, the book doesn't have that encyclopedic feel that Mastering the EOS Flash System has. Yes, there's an appendix, but it's not as extensive as the other book, nor does this book venture into studio lighting. The Speedlighter's Handbook main feature is large sections focusing on practical applications for speed lights. The explanations are clear, plain and well illustrated and could easily apply to any brand of speedlight camera combination. There's also an array of do-it-yourself rigs to show how you can improvise to get the job done and how the stuff works. There's also some fun shoots just to show you how you can be creative and extend your artistry. It's not an end-to-end read, but you'll find yourself exploring the book by flicking through and working down into different chapters. The Speedlighter's Handbook, second edition, is published by Pearson. Now get the second edition. Booko's got it from $66.48 to $86 in paperback and from $33 to $63 in ebook. That's dollars Australian. Peach Pit, through whom it's published, and where I got it from, have it for $43.99 and $35.19 US. But they've got exactly the same price on both the first and second edition, so be careful you get the right edition. Now for Nikon aficionados, there's Mastering Nikon Speedlights, a complete guide to small flash photography and the creative lighting system by Alan Hess. And again, that's published by Pearson. In paperback, it's $41.32 to $98.41, and it's also available as an e-books. I can't tell you what that's like because I haven't looked at it, but it is from the same family, and if it follows the same profile that Sil's book does, it'll be a good read. Cheers.
Excellent. Thank you, David. All right, that will do it for another week. Until we speak with you again, take care.
ShuttersIncPodcast.com.
AnotherAudioTo.com quality podcast.
For questions, comments and feedback, email theboys@ShuttersIncPodcast.com.